You are listening to A Good Book on Sun Sounds of Arizona.
Kirin's The Spell of Noan, written and narrated by James D. Priest.
Chapter 26. Iliani turned quickly toward the shrill voice. The demoralized Speckerin wasn't certain where it was coming from. She pointed and spoke quietly. We have company. Two Kirins were astride animals she had never known to be Ilon. An expert in Ilonry, she studied the sleek creatures with shining silver backs, rust-trimmed legs, and white underbellies. She had seen them in the home forest. They were gray foxes, the only breed of fox that climbs trees, and does so fearlessly. Their black eyes sparkling in the sunlight, they stood attentively awaiting orders from their masters. One of the Kirins gave a high-pitched command, and his animal started forward. The rider had an angular face and graying hair, wore a light green traveling garment, and on his long feet were hiking moccasins. Approaching the travelers, he perused them with unhidden curiosity. He halted near them and spoke Ruvan in a surprisingly piercing voice.
"Which of you is leader?"
Deliani nodded toward her companion. "The magician Speckerin," she said, also in Ruvan. "He's exhausted from events of the past few days." She noticed a series of narrow straps through which the Kirin seemed to maintain his balance aboard the animal. "Our squirrels and birds require no such harnesses," she thought, "but animals of this dimension do." The rider climbed down and strode toward them, but continued past to the recumbent Tali, where he knelt down.
"She's not a lad at all," he said, "and not a casualty of the Barwood Grove."
Standing up, he called to his companion, "Bring the other here." The younger foreigner was attired like his compatriot, and something about him caught Deliani's eye. Glistening in the sunlight, his hair was thick, longer than usual, and reddish-brown, a hair color she had never seen in a Kirin. He said a word, his Ilon sauntered forward and stopped next to the first, and Deliani could see that he was looking at her. As he climbed down, she saw that his eyebrows were the color of his hair, gentle, dark green eyes beneath them. Then she caught sight of another Kirin strapped to the animal's back. The younger stranger released bindings at the Ilon's flank, and he and his companion slid a limp body to the ground. The old magician came alive. "Hut!" he cried, and with Deliani's help, rose shakily to his feet. Moving to the motionless body, he kneeled down.
"He's not dead," said the older of the new Kirins, "but a victim of the Barwood tree. Not to worry. He'll sleep another day or two, and when he wakes up, we'll be as healthy as ever, though a little hungrier. He'll be better rested than the two of you up here."
Deliani again helped Speckerin to his feet.
"Thank you for finding him and burying him here," he said in the dialect of his home region.
Deliani reminded him to use Ruvan, and he repeated his thanks.
"I'm Issar," said the elder one. He glanced at his associate. "This is Renegar."
Both raised their arms and bent their elbows in an apparent gesture of greeting, and Issar continued.
"Welcome to the domain of Queen Lenara."
"Where did you find our lad?" asked Speckerin.
"Later," said Issar, raising a hand. "The girl. She appears gravely injured. How did it happen?"
"Yesterday afternoon," said the magician, "she fell to the ground from her Ilon and has been unconscious since. We're deeply worried but have nothing with which to treat her."
He nodded toward Hut.
"In desperation, I sent the lad to the Barwood Grove, which I am afraid was his undoing."
Speckerin had revived at Hut's return, but was fading again from fatigue, and Deliani helped him sit down.
"If you'd like," said Issar, "we'll take you to a place where you can all recuperate."
"We need all the help we can get," sighed Speckerin, glancing at Deliani. "We accept your invitation gratefully."
"And you," said Issar to his compatriot in a shrill voice, "who have yearned to soar through the air as your cousin Kirin's do." He gestured toward the ravens. "Aren't you happy now that our tribesmen don't use birds and have never flown?" He glanced at Tali. "See what happened to this girl?" The younger stranger, Deliani noted, didn't respond. He turned the two foxes around. Then he, Issar, and Deliani lifted Hutt's limp body back onto Runagar's Eilon, Tali onto Issar's, and both were gently but securely strapped in place. The strangers climbed atop their animals. Deliani glanced at Spekeren, whose tired head was hanging. "He's in no condition to fly," she said. "We might meet with yet another calamity." Little did she know that a short time ago he'd gladly have traveled on the ground and shunned the air. But after the expedition's first few days, he felt more at ease on his raven than he ever thought he could. Nonetheless, here he agreed with Deliani. "He's welcome to ride with me," said Issar, extending a hand. He and Deliani helped Spekeren aboard the fox. Gripping a strap, he situated himself wearily behind the newcomer. "We must hasten," he said. "I fear for Tali's heiress." "We'll go no faster than we did in coming here," said Issar, "so as not to disturb our passengers." He turned and looked at the magician. "That includes you." Spekeren and the strangers sauntered off, carrying their valuable cargo, the magician hanging on as tightly as he could. Watching as they moved away, Deliani hoped he wouldn't tumble off. "If he does," she thought, "he won't have nearly so far to fall as Tali did." Deliani summoned the four ravens and mounted Manet. She instructed them to stay together, and all lifted off. Then, circling above the foxes, now moving at a brisk trot, she kept them in sight. Turning to Spekeren as they moved quickly past brush, trees, and wildflowers, Issar spoke in a high voice. "Your lad isn't the first to succumb to the Barwood Grove. Its charm can be subtle, almost undetectable, until it's too late."
"I tried to warn him," croaked the magician, holding on for dear life.
"Nonetheless," said Issar, "he'll be fine. You asked where we found him. Yesterday afternoon, Runagar and I were out on a mission for the Queen. Coming home through the forest at dusk, we smelled barwood sap and realized a tree must have been violated. We searched the grove and found it, liquid seeping from a puncture that looked like it was made by a knife. In our forest, violation of a barwood tree is uncommon, but can obviously be perilous. It had to have been an act of desperation or total ignorance, and in either case, whoever did it might need help. But no one was in sight. What we found were Kirin footprints leading to the tree and the tracks of a large bird leading away. After patching the wound, a hazardous procedure in itself, we searched farther and came across your young friend lying on the ground, motionless, halfway across the grove, his eilon beside him."
"And the faithful creature would have stayed," said Spekeren with a burst of energy, recalling this stranger's hostile remarks about birds, "until her master recovered or expired." Paying no attention, Issar went on. "The bird's tracks disappeared where we think it lifted off. It must have sensed its master was in peril, flown to him and picked him up, walked a few steps with him in its beak, then lifted off and transported him away, setting him down where we found him, a safe distance from the injured tree. We have no other explanation for how he got there. He was breathing, and we knew he'd recover. Had he been beside the oozing tree very long, he would have stopped breathing and perished. He owes his life to the bird, who risked its life to save him, because a bird is just as susceptible to the sap as a Kirin." Spekeren glanced up at Lisam, circling above with the others. "Though rare," he thought, "feats like that have been known to happen and have been preserved in the annals of Curlace magic. When I can, I will see to it that Lisam's brave actions are transcribed and remembered as well." Glancing at Issar, he found it curious the stranger used the word "it" when referring to Lisam. How little he must understand, thought Spekerin, about birds, wonderful, loyal creatures who apparently have no place in these foreigners' lives.
"How did you locate us there in the forest?" asked the old magician.
"The lad was obviously an outsider," said Issar. "We didn't think he'd be there alone, far from home. By then it was dark, and we used torches from our packs. With courteous words and gestures, we tried to convince the bird that we, too, wanted to help the lad. If it would lead us to his companions, we'd follow, carrying him. It seemed confused and tried several times to pick the body up in its beak, as if to fly away with it. But we convinced it that it would be far more perilous to do that than for us to bury him on the ground. We camped overnight near the Barwood Grove, making sure the lad was comfortable. This morning we strapped him to Runagar's Island. The bird flew ahead, and we followed with its young master as promised. So as not to damage your lad, we kept our foxes at a trot. Obviously, we were traveling more slowly than the bird could, but it kept us in sight and led us to you."
"What a marvelous rescue," said Spekerin. "We are greatly indebted to you for your gallant efforts."
It was a warm and sunny afternoon as the implausible company of animals, birds, and kirins wound its way through the forest. Flying in the sun, it was especially warm for Deliani, and she realized this was the first time she had thought of the weather all day. She looked down at Spekerin, gripping the animal's strap. He was drained, and she knew that until he recovered, she'd have to be the strong one who would make hard decisions and do difficult deeds. But she also knew his magic would be essential before the mission was over. She would help him become himself again. To her surprise, one of the most noticeable features of the party traveling below was Runagar's coppery red hair, which glistened and shone in the sunlight. And, even from this distance, his dark green eyes seemed to be following her. From above, she studied the sizable and powerful foxes. They were discussed among Curlay's practitioners at home as having the potential to be Eilon, but she had never known them to be, because of one obstacle. They were too large to be sheltered in clan trees. What solution, she wondered, have these Kirins come up with? The answer would be forthcoming, and sooner than she thought. Throughout the journey, the anxious Lisam, Osalam, and Farallon kept close watch on their masters below, riding on foreign Eilon. The party passed north of the Barwood Grove and proceeded for some time before approaching a small hill. The animals halted at its base beside a glade of trees and brush. Gliding in low, Deliani could see no reason for them to stop. Then, almost imperceptibly, the leafy branches of a bush began to separate and continued to part. Soon a gap in the base of the hillside was visible. Issar informed Spekerin this was where they lived, and the birds should land and enter. The magician slid off the animal and signaled to Deliani, and she directed the four ravens to a smooth landing in front of the widening space.
"Follow us in," said Issar.
Then the foxes bearing the foreign Kirins and the unconscious youths started forward and disappeared into the increasingly gaping opening. The ravens eyed it suspiciously. Spekerin and Deliani peered into the dim recess. They could see nothing, yet they knew they must enter. But the Eilon, despite encouragement by Deliani and lifelong discipline, were so reluctant to pass into a dark, unfamiliar space that they refused to go. Realizing that to them this was more threatening than the lightning storm they had endured, Deliani dismounted. She told the birds she would go before them, and they must follow. And with the old magician at her side, she led the fearful ravens into the dim cavity. Chapter 27.
After entering, Deliani turned to see the gap behind them closing. "We must go forward," she said, and they did, cautiously, able to see nothing. Issar's voice pierced the darkness, instructing them to follow, explaining they were in a tunnel, that it would soon narrow, and that it would take a while to reach their destination. The ravens required constant encouragement to make any forward progress. To an Eilon, its master's voice is of utmost importance, a source of support, pleasure, and direction. But now, although many loving Curlace words were spoken, the party's progress was halting and disorganized. The Kirins could hear and feel the birds and tried to keep them close together so as not to lose contact with any. Osalam and Manet gamely followed their masters. Farallon and Lisam persevered, presuming their stricken masters were ahead. From ahead, but how far they couldn't tell, Issar continued to reassure them, his voice echoing through the darkness, telling them they were doing well and not to be discouraged. But none in the trailing party, neither Kirin nor Eilon, shared his confidence or enthusiasm. At first the tunnel curved to the left, then inclined upward, then turned to the right, then sloped downward, and it continued changing its path as they went. The black passageway became smaller, to a height not much greater than that of an adult Kirin, and a width of equal extent. Spekran and Deliani found themselves brushing or bumping against the walls and a low ceiling. "I think we've found where the tunnel narrows," said the rankled Spekran. "But what in the world happened to the foxes? They could never have made it through here." The ravens, a great deal larger than Kirin's, had a much worse time than their masters, winding their restricted way through the gloom, abrading heads and bodies against rough surfaces. But still more difficult was the confinement the tunnel forced upon creatures whose normal habitats were treetops and sky. Unaccustomed to hearing sounds of distress from their Eilon, the Kirins were troubled when gravelly moans came from the throats of the beleaguered birds. Finally making out a small circle of light some distance ahead, Deliani hoped they were nearing their destination. The beacon of light grew larger and brighter as they approached, and soon the two Kirins passed through an arched entrance and were dumbfounded by what they saw. Stopping to gaze at their surroundings, they were nearly bowled over by four anxious ravens, pushing their way through the entrance, overjoyed to be out of the cramped darkness. They were in a chamber that was enormous by Kirin standards, by far the largest enclosed space Spekran and Deliani had ever seen. As tree dwellers, their existence was in the forest, and their rooms and trees were by necessity modest in size. They could never have dreamed of an indoor space like this. Gazing about, they realized this was a cave. "Cave dwellers came to our rescue," thought Spekran. "I knew they existed, but I've never met one. Until now." Then he saw the water. Halfway between where he stood and the opposite wall ran a spirited underground stream. Looking up and to his right, he saw its source. It issued from an aperture high in the wall, cascading down as a waterfall and forming a clear pool in the floor. From there, it coursed to his left and departed the cave under a shelf of rock. Over the stream were three bridges, a large stone one at the center and two smaller wooden ones near either end. Illumination came from thousands of torches hanging from the rough stone walls and the ceiling. "It's a wonder they can keep them lit," marveled Spekran. "When the right time comes, I'll ask how they do it." The floor was flat, and from it the wall went up vertically to the outer border of a dome-shaped ceiling. From right to left, the wall was rounded, and as the magician followed it around, it was a single curved surface. The space was thus cylindrical, with a spherical roof overhead. Spekran estimated that its height, from the floor to the upper reaches of the ceiling, was 1.5 times that of a mature maple tree, and its width was 3/4 its height. The wall was honeycombed all the way around, from top to bottom, with doors, windows, terraces, and openings of diverse sizes and shapes at varying levels above the floor. He wondered how much of this architecture was natural and how much had been fashioned by the cave's inhabitants. But something clearly Kieran made was an elaborate network of ramps, stairways, and ladders, hewn into or hanging from the wall, appearing to connect all the openings, and at some points leading down to the floor. Kieran's dressed in light green, like Issar and Runagar, appeared in many doorways and on balconies, looking down with curiosity on the visitors and their strange Eilon. Many onlookers raised their arms in the gesture of greeting Issar and Runagar had used in the forest. Perusing them, Deliani noted a few with the same hair color as Runagar. "The first time I've seen it," she thought. "What else is different about this tribe?" Radiating outward from the floor were several large tunnels. In them were numbers of sleek foxes. "So that's how they house them," thought Deliani. "They don't live in trees at all, neither Eilon nor Kieran, and there's plenty of room to spare." "But living in a cave," she chuckled, "is clearly not a solution the home clans would consider, nor is one available." Issar had been informing others that the tribe had visitors, two of whom would be taken to the healing area, and now strode back to Spekeren and Deliani. "Your sanctuary is astounding," said Spekeren, buoyed by his surroundings. "How long has your tribe lived here?"
"Many hundreds of years," said Issar. "But I'll let our queen answer your questions. Meanwhile, welcome to our home, where I hope you find rest and healing."
He pointed to an empty tunnel on the far side of the cave.
"Your birds may stay there. They will be well looked after. Escort them there, and we'll then visit Queen Lenara."
Spekeren remained near the arched entrance, conversing animatedly with his host, while Deliani led the four ravens toward the stream. She glanced to her left. Runagar was there, and their eyes met. She gazed at him, riding on the lead animal, the foxes bearing Hutt and Tally having entered the cave through another entrance. "There's something about him," she thought, "the spirit in his eye, his dignified manner. He and the Eilon came by a different route, which took them longer. Those sizable animals could never have made it through the tunnel we took." She stopped and stood with the ravens, watching as Runagar and the foxes sauntered across the cave's floor and halted near the central bridge. She told the birds to stay where they were, then moved closer to the animals. Several Kirans were untying the bindings holding Tally and Hutt, who were then lowered gently to stretchers on the floor. To Deliani's relief, they appeared unharmed by the trek. She went back to the birds. Leading them toward the stone bridge, she noted that the Kirans were strapping Hutt and Tally securely to the stretchers and wondered why. Farallon and Lisam were distressed at seeing their young masters still appearing lifeless. Deliani led the ravens across the bridge to the empty tunnel, host tribe members staring down all the while from ramps and verandas. After voicing loving and encouraging phrases to each bird, she left them in their cool and roomy shelter, hopeful they would soon be attended to. As she was returning, host Kirans were carrying the litters across the bridge, four to a stretcher, and then bore Tally and Hutt toward the wall. Deliani followed them. Upon reaching the wall, ropes were slipped through perforations at the four corners of each litter. Deliani caught her breath, for within moments the unconscious youths were being hoisted off the ground and drawn rapidly upward along the face of the wall. Try as she might, she could not discern by what mechanism this was being carried out. Backing away, she saw her companions reaching an altitude she estimated to be three-quarters the height of the wall. No wonder they strapped them in, she thought. There they were swung, one after the other, into an opening and disappeared. Issar and Spekeren had crossed the bridge and now joined her, Issar noting her concern.
"That is our Farinan," he said, "our place of healing. There we have many remedies you lacked in the woods.
One of our magicians, Lydor, is a healer, a Feranor. His helpers are also trained in the curing arts. He has been informed that the lad was overcome by Barwood, and the girl's heiress must be sustained. Issar pointed to a terrace high overhead. There he is right now, attending to your friends. Squinting, Speckran stared upward. His host was obviously more accustomed to the cave than he, and perhaps had sharper eyes. But from this vantage point, the old magician could see neither the healer nor the youths. At home, he thought, where we have no Feranor, I'd be caring for them. Yet we must trust these strangers, for without them we would still be in the forest. Here, Tali has a far greater chance of getting help. You must meet our queen, said Issar. He strode toward the wall, motioning them to follow. He began climbing a ladder leading to a ramp, leading to a steep stairway, and so on up the sheer surface. Even in his depleted state, Speckran could climb, something Kirans do with ease, and this ascent, it turned out, was a pleasure. Steadily scaling the towering wall, the higher they went, the better was the view. He gazed down on the stream, across at the waterfall, and into enticing passageways in the opposing wall, viewing everything with interest and from a continually changing perspective. Finally reaching a level above the healing area, Issar entered an opening larger than any other, Deliani and Speckran following. There, in a sizable chamber lighted by torches along the walls, on a throne carved of stone sat an ancient Kirin woman. Due to their largely vegetarian diet and high activity level, Kirins are virtually always slender. But the travelers looked in wonder upon this woman. She was the thinnest and most wizened Kirin they had ever seen. But she inspected the two foreigners, her eyes sparkling and seeming to dance with curiosity. Wearing a garment of pale green, as did everyone of this tribe the travelers had seen, she was surrounded by attendants.
May I introduce Lanara, said Issar respectfully, good queen of the Shillitoes.
He turned to her.
May I present the voyagers, whose companions lie in our Farinin?
Welcome to our cave, rasped the old queen. Where did your trek begin, and what is your purpose?
Deliani marveled at her voice. Issar's was piercing. She didn't know whether that was peculiar to him or characteristic for the tribe, but the queen's was entirely different. It seemed old, as ancient as she looked, and was coarse and gravelly, but somehow it was gentle.
Kirin's, The Spell of Noan, written and narrated by James D. Priest.